Chapter 4. Interest in the incomings and outgoings of the trains. At first, he often put his head into Lamp's little room, but he never found Lamp's there. A pair or two of velveteen shoulders he usually found there, stooping over the fire, sometimes in connection with a clasped knife, and a piece of bread and meat. But the answer to his inquiry, "Where's Lamp's?" was, either that he was t'other side the line, or, that it was his off time, or in the latter case, his own personal introduction to another Lamps who was not his Lamps. However, he was not so desperately set upon seeing Lamps now, but he bore the disappointment. Nor did he so wholly devote himself to his severe application to the study of Mugby Junction, as to neglect exercise. On the contrary, he took a walk every day, and always the same walk. But the weather turned cold and wet again, and the window was never open. 3. At length, after a lapse of some days, there came another streak of fine bright hardy autumn weather. It was a Saturday. The window was open, and the children were gone. Not surprising, this, for he had patiently watched and waited at the corner until they were gone. "Good day," he said to the face, absolutely getting his hat clear off his head this time. "Good day to you, sir. I am glad you have a fine sky again to look at." "Thank you, sir. It is kind of you. You are an invalid, I fear?" "No, sir. I have very good health." "But are you not always lying down?" "Oh yes, I am always lying down, because I cannot sit up. But I am not an invalid." The laughing eye seemed highly to enjoy his great mistake. "Would you mind taking the trouble to come in, sir? There is a beautiful view from this window, and you would see that I am not at all ill, being so good as to care." It was said to help him, as he stood irresolute, but evidently desiring to enter, with his diffident hand on the latch of the garden gate. It did help him, and he went in. The room upstairs was a very clean white room with a low roof. Its only inmate lay on a couch that brought her face to a level with the window. The couch was white too, and her simple dresser wrapper being light blue, like the band around her hair, she had an ethereal look and a fanciful appearance of lying among clouds. He felt that she instinctively perceived him to be by habit a downcast, taciturn man. It was another help to him to have established that understanding so easily, and got it over. There was an awkward constraint upon him, nevertheless, as he touched her hand, and took a chair at the side of her couch. "I see now," he began, not at all fluently, "how you occupy your hand. Only seeing you from the path outside, I thought you were playing upon something." She was engaged in very nimbly and dexterously making lace. A lace pillow lay upon her breast, and the quick movements and changes of her hands upon it, as she worked, had given him the action he had misinterpreted. "That is curious," she answered with a bright smile. "For I often fancy, myself, that I play tunes while I am at work. Have you any musical knowledge?" She shook her head. "I think I could pick out tunes, if I had any instrument, which could be made as handy to me as my lace pillow. But I dare say I deceive myself. At all events, I shall never know." "You have a musical voice. Excuse me, I have heard you sing." "With the children?" she answered, slightly coloring. "Oh yes. I sing with the dear children, if it can be called singing." Barbox Brothers glanced at the two small forms in the room, and hazarded the speculation that she was fond of children, and that she was learned in new systems of teaching them. "Very fond of them," she said, shaking her head again, "but I know nothing of teaching, beyond the interest I have in it, and the pleasure it gives me when they learn. Perhaps your overhearing my little scholars sing some of their lessons has led you so far astray as to think me a grand teacher?" "Ah, I thought so. No, I have only read and been told about that system. It seemed so pretty and pleasant, and to treat them so like the merry robins they are, that I took up with it in my little way. You don't need to be told what a very little way mine is, sir, she added with a glance at the small forms and round the room. All this time her hands were busy at her lace pillow. As they still continued so, and as there was a kind of substitute for conversation in the click and play of its pegs, Barbox Brothers took the opportunity of observing her. He guessed her to be 30. The charm of her transparent face and large bright brown eyes was not that they were passively resigned, but that they were actively and thoroughly cheerful. Even her busy hands, which of their own thinness alone might have besought compassion, plied their task with a gay courage that made mere compassion an unjustifiable assumption of superiority and an impertinence. He saw her eyes in the act of rising towards his, and he directed his towards the prospect, saying, "Beautiful, indeed. Most beautiful, sir. I have sometimes had a fancy that I would like to sit up, for once, only to try how it looks to an erect head. But what a foolish fancy that would be to encourage. It cannot look more lovely to anyone than it does to me." Her eyes were turned to it, as she spoke, with most delighted admiration and enjoyment. There was not a trace in it of any sense of deprivation. And those threads of railway, with their puffs of smoke and steam changing places so fast, make it so lively for me, she went on. I think of the number of people who can go where they wish, on their business, or their pleasure. I remember that the puffs make signs to me that they are actually going while I look, and that enlivens the prospect with abundance of company, if I want company. There is the great junction too. I don't see it under the foot of the hill, but I can very often hear it, and I always know it is there. It seems to join me, in a way, to I don't know how many places and things that I shall never see. With an abashed kind of idea that it might have already joined himself to something he had never seen, he said constrainedly, "Just so. And so you see, sir," pursued Phoebe, "I am not the invalid you thought me, and I am very well off indeed." "You have a happy disposition," said Barbox Brothers. Perhaps with a slight excusatory touch for his own disposition. "Ah, but you should know my father," she replied. "His is the happy disposition. Don't mind, sir." For his reserve took the alarm at a step upon the stairs, and he distrusted that he would be set down for a troublesome intruder. "This is my father coming." The door opened, and the father paused there. "Why, Lamps!" exclaimed Barbox Brothers, starting from his chair. "How do you do, Lamps?" To which Lamps responded, "The gentleman for nowhere. How do you do, sir?" And they shook hands, to the greatest admiration and surprise of Lamp's daughter. "I have looked you up half a dozen times since that night," said Barbox Brothers, "but have never found you." "So I've heard on, sir, so I've heard on," returned Lamps. "It's your being noticed so often down at the junction, without taking any train, that has begun to get you the name among us of the gentleman for nowhere. No offense in my having called you by it when took by surprise, I hope, sir? None at all. It's as good a name for me as any other you could call me by. But may I ask you a question in the corner here?" Lamps suffered himself to be led aside from his daughter's couch by one of the buttons of his velveteen jacket. "Is this the bedside, where you sing your songs?" Lamps nodded. The gentleman for nowhere clapped him on the shoulder, and they faced about again. "Upon my word, my dear," said Lamps then to his daughter, looking from her to her visitor, "it is such an amaze to me to find you brought acquainted with this gentleman, that I must, if this gentleman will excuse me, take a rounder." Mr. Lamps demonstrated in action what this meant, by pulling out his oily handkerchief rolled up in the form of a ball, and giving himself an elaborate smear, from behind the right ear, up the cheek, across the forehead, and down the other cheek to behind his left ear. After this operation he shone exceedingly. "It's according to my custom, when particular warmed up by any agitation, sir," he offered by way of apology. And really, I am thrown into that state of amaze by finding you brought acquainted with Phoebe, that I think I will, if you'll excuse me, take another rounder. Which he did, seeming to be greatly restored by it. They were now both standing by the side of her couch, and she was working at her lace pillow. Your daughter tells me, said Barbox Brothers, still in a half-reluctant, shamefaced way, that she never sits up. No, sir, nor never has done. You see, her mother, who died when she was 1 year and 2 months old, was subject to very bad fits, and as she had never mentioned to me that she was subject to fits, they couldn't be guarded against. Consequently, she dropped the baby when took, and this happened. It was very wrong of her, said Barbox Brothers with a knitted brow, to marry you, making a secret of her infirmity. Apostrophe, well, sir, pleaded Lamps in behalf of the long deceased. You see, Phoebe and me, we have talked that over too. And Lord bless us! Such a number on us has our infirmities, what with fits, and what with misfits, of one sort and another, that if we confessed to them all, before we got married, most of us might never get married. Might not that be for the better? Not in this case, sir, said Phoebe, giving her hand to her father. No, not in this case, sir, said her father, patting it between his own. You correct me, returned Barbox Brothers with a blush. And I must look so like a brute, that at all events it would be superfluous in me to confess to that infirmity. I wish you would tell me a little more about yourselves. I hardly knew how to ask it of you, for I am conscious that I have a bad stiff manner, a dull discouraging way with me, but I wish you would. With all our hearts, sir, returned Lamps gaily for both. And first of all, that you may know my name, stay, interposed the visitor with a slight flush. What signifies your name? Lamps is name enough for me. I like it. It is bright and expressive. What do I want more? Why, to be sure, sir, returned Lamps. I have in general no other name down at the junction. But I thought, on account of your being here as a first-class single, in a private character, that you might. The visitor waved the thought away with his hand, and Lamps acknowledged the mark of confidence by taking another rounder. You are hard-worked, I take for granted? Said Barbox Brothers, when the subject of the rounder came out of it much dirtier than he went into it. Lamps was beginning, not particular so when his daughter took him up. Oh yes, sir, he is very hard worked. 14, 15, 18 hours a day. Sometimes 24 hours at a time. And you, said Barbox Brothers, what with your school, Phoebe, and what with your lace making, but my school is a pleasure to me, she interrupted, opening her brown eyes wider, as if surprised to find him so obtuse. I began it when I was but a child, because it brought me, and other children into company, don't you see? That was not work. I carry it on still, because it keeps children about me. That is not work. I do it as love, not as work. Then my lace pillow, her busy hands had stopped, as if her argument required all her cheerful earnestness, but now went on again at the name. It goes with my thoughts when I think, and it goes with my tunes when I hum any, and that's not work. Why, you yourself thought it was music, you know, sir. And so it is to me. Everything is, cried Lamps radiantly. Everything is music to her, sir. My father is, at any rate, said Phoebe, exultingly pointing her thin forefinger at him. There is more music in my father than there is in a brass band. I say, my dear, it's very familiarly done, you know, but you are flattering your father, he protested, sparkling. No, I am not, sir, I assure you. No, I am not. If you could hear my father sing, you would know I am not. But you never will hear him sing, because he never sings to anyone but me. However tired he is, he always sings to me when he comes home. When I lay here long ago, quite a poor little broken doll, he used to sing to me. More than that, he used to make songs, bringing in whatever little jokes we had between us. More than that, he often does so to this day. Oh, I'll tell of you, father, as the gentleman has asked about you. He is a poet, sir. I shouldn't wish the gentleman, my dear, observed Lamps, for the moment turning grave, to carry away that opinion of your father, because it might look as if I was given to asking the stars in a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.